Okay.
Bye-bye.
Oh, okay.
On the hand, it is a large familiarity and also a program of members. To the location of the division fisheries within the department. And then of course also to take our own normal committee mission. Members, as I said, we need to be going, getting out there to the point where we can do two things at the same time. On one hand, while we're taking our own normal mission, at the same time having to do our own call it oversight of the location of any particular agency or division within the department. In that way, we find ourselves exercising both our oversight visits, responsibility, and also getting to know the divisions and the entities and the agents better. We're not assuming that we will be able to know coming out of here everything, but at least get a sense as to where we are and what is happening where we are. Obviously, this will have been followed up with official visits. On Friday, the minister will be seeing our own oversight visit to the fisher community at West Coast. Again, this is all part of our oversight activity, the committee of parliament. We also got an indication that there were going to be some challenges here at the end. None so far, but again, as I said, this is a normal committee session. With the idea, we shouldn't have no problem. But if they're not here, it's fine. We continue with our business as well. Minister, we only have two items, members, that we're going to be dealing with. The one is a report on the incorporation of the fisheries component within MCM into the department, and specifically into the fisheries division in the department. And the other one is a sense that we'll get from the minister and the interaction that there was there in a presidential session with the AgriSA. AgriSA, together with many of these other stakeholders, DAO, probably won't go to one of their conferences on Thursday, on Wednesday, NAFU, you name them. They're very important stakeholders as far as our community work is concerned. We take a keen interest in any activities that they get engaged in. So there was such a session which we will also be privileged by the minister, the interaction that there was there. With RBSA and the specific issues. We did get a report of that session, which will also, you know, get some more insight from the minister going forward on the issues raised. Now, those are only two areas that bring us together for today, members. And then only in our next session that we shall do our administrative work in terms of minutes and so on and so forth. We are going to go and recess effectively from the 17th of December. Okay, members, I think that should be it. Without really wasting much of time, we should really spend more time on the issues to be raised by the minister and the department. And then the minister will also, through the honorable the block. That means I will also take pride in saying a few words before that we or in the course of the briefing. Number that is, and then we'll run over to the minister and his partner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair President. Good morning, members, and good morning to the officials. The department, as well as the cabinet, finalized the appointment of Mr. Langa Vidya as the new director general of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. It has been so announced in the media. The cabinet, immediately after cabinet appointment, cabinet makes an announcement in the media. So there is no way in which we could have precluded the matter being in the media. And it is not a departmental media session, but a cabinet media session in which the cabinet secretariat announces whatever decisions were taken in cabinet. We have also filled the position of the CFO, and Mr. Jacob Schlatweil, who is sitting next to Mr. Peter Gabete, has been appointed as the CFO. Mr. Peter Gabete was acting as the Deputy Director General for Trade and Marketing. The organogram has also now been finalized with the Public Service and Administration Department. So we'll be able to speedily fill those posts. We'll be interviewing for two Deputy Directors General in the October, the second week of October, and then we'll also be able to complete the process of matching the staff to the new organogram. And that alignment process will bring about changes, and as you know, changes are not very well received in the Department of Agriculture, because there will be replacement of staff, and their position will change. And obviously they'll start posting letters in your pigeonholes again, complaining about this in the department. But the new organogram brings about the complete single Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. So instead of us having separate units of finance, all the different units of finance will reside under the CFO. So obviously members who were in the finance unit of fisheries will move to a central finance unit. So I do anticipate some rumblings from the staff, because change is not always easy, but it is necessary for us to create one department. And obviously with a new organizational structure, we need to place people accordingly. I'll also ask that when the department does its briefing, that they give you the implications of certain of the functions that they have received. We'll do the presentation on the fisheries unit in terms of the presidential proclamation and the implications of the proclamation, the legislative financial implications of the proclamation, the status of fisheries resources, the draft policy of small-scale fisheries, the status report on the reopening of the abalone fishery, as well as monitoring and control and surveillance of issues. I'll immediately hand over to Mr. Langa Vidya to take you through the program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister.
New CEO.
presentation, Honorable Chair and Minister, we'll go through the legislative implications of the Presidential Proclamation. If you look at the financial issues and implications of the split of functions, it will address the status of the fisheries resources. It should talk to the draft policy for the small scale fisheries sector, and as well as the fiscal report on the reopening of the Apollo fisheries. It will address issues of monitoring, control, and surveillance. Those are the five issues that we'll talk to. We all recall that on the 1st of July 2009, as well as on the 10th of February 2010, the President made a proclamation in which the current functions as determined by the respective statute of two proclamations were transferred and wholesale to the new department. The legislation that remains with the DEA, Environmental Affairs, is Section 38 of the Sea Fisheries Act of 1998, the Dumping Sea Control Act of 1980, the National Environment Management in the Acadian Coastal Management Act, as well as the National Environmental Management Act of 1998, together with the regulation for the management of the boat-based whale watching and protection of turtles. Continue with the legislation that remains with the Department of Environmental Affairs and this also includes the regulation of the management of white shark cage diving, the Section 43 of the Marine Living Resources Act, the Seashore Act of 1935, the Prince Edward Islands Act of 1948, Sea Bears and Seals Protection Act of 1972, as well as the Antarctic Treaties Act of 1996 and Dumping at Sea Control Act of 1980. With regard to the current functional arrangement, after the 1st of April, the fisheries management function of the Prince of Staff has the following strategic branches. One is strategic support management, which is human resource management. Second one is the chief financial office, which deals with supply chain management issues, financial management, and revenue management, as well as the monitoring, control, and surveillance, which deals with special investigations, environmental protection of vessels, as well as issues of compliance. There is also the marine resources management, which deals with inshore fisheries management, offshore and high sea fisheries management, as well as issues of economic development. There is also, of course, the fisheries research, which deals with issues of research, resource management, as well as issues of aquaculture. With the transfer, the former MCM establishment had about 890 posts. Of these, 737 were transferred to DAF, and 152 posts remained with the Department of Environmental Affairs. Of the 737 posts, 620 have been filled, and we've got 117 vacancies. To ensure functionality, the fisheries branch uses HR, financial, and legislative delegations that are passed during the DEP pending mid-term review and alignment of policies. These are currently being finalized. With regard to the speech that was proclaimed by the President, the Department of Environmental Affairs has motivated that the President's speech has called name. But on the other hand, we believe that the current speech affects our ability to fulfill our mandate. It makes us unable to fully implement the constructive approach to fisheries. We cannot manage fisheries in isolation and need to consider the impact of fisheries on the ecosystem. So we want to have a say also on the ecosystem. Secondly, the marine protection area was always invested as a fisheries management tool, not just a conservation tool, and we want, therefore, to have a say on the conservation tool. It is difficult to manage captured fisheries without considering the management of sharks and whales, as well as seals and seabirds. As a result, what we see in the present arrangement is fragmentation, there's lack of integration and coherence. With regard to financial issues, we believe that not all the funds required for the visa function and special costs based on the proposal pieces have been obtained enough. We've only received 102 million from the original allocation. The amount that the Department of Foreign Affairs and Health transferred to personal cost is 116 million. The cost to our competition is 5 million, and this has not yet been transferred to us. The government grant for vessel operating cost is 145 million, which should be transferred to DAF. And DEA only intends to transfer 100 million. Based on the current expenditure, estimate of national expenditure settlement, DAF will receive approximately 22 million from DEA, which is 203 million less than what was spent on money and coastal management in the previous financial year. We are having discussions both with the DEA and the National Treasury for reserve basis. Data of fisheries resources. The majority of the fisheries also currently harvested are considered to be fully harvested or over harvested. The fully harvested resources include shallow hake, shallow water hake, some tuna, squid, south coast rock lobster, prawns, and favorite oysters and kelp. Over exported resources include deep water hake, Southern bluefin tuna, abalone, west coast lobster, south coast oysters, and moose line and net fish. Under its size resources include the swordfish, red eye herring, and many seaweed. Sustainable management means keeping the resource at the level at which reproduction is maximized. We have got cover plans which have been developed for abalone, deep water egg, and rock lobster. For the west and southern coast. Recovery for some species can show results after 3 to 4 years of reduced extraction. The process is slow, and the resources such as Apollo need to take much longer to recover. Feasibility of other fisheries is being investigated, including octopus, whelk, crab, and red fish. At this stage, there is insufficient evidence with regard to Cartagonese toothfish, moose grass, some lionfish, what mussels, and a number of the fish. We are uncertain of how, what the data is, how strong the resource is. The National Summit in 2007 was an important report, mandated the National Summit to develop a single policy for small-scale fisheries. The policy court also ordered the state to finalize the policy framework on the 31st of August 2010. Our minister approved the draft policy that was published in the Government Gazette on the 3rd of September 2010. We will embark on an extensive public consultation process for 60 days from the 3rd of September. The objective of the policy are that we need to have a single policy for small-scale fisheries. There should be preferential access to small-scale fishing communities who are substantially dependent on fishing for their livelihood. We need to have the multi-species approach to allocating rights to small-scale fishers, because they cannot make do only with access to one with a few species. They need to be able to go and fish as they've already done and take whatever they can get to solve their own needs. There needs to be co-management. We need to safeguard the integrity and sustainability of the resource. We also need to promote economic growth for the creation of design work and sustainable livelihoods. On commercial abalone, as all of us are aware, or remember, the commercial abalone fisheries was reopened after an intensive process on the 1st of July 2010. We have received 296 applications for abalone test permits, and 286 applications have been processed and issued. 255 permits have been collected this far, and 89 vessels have been issued. Vessel licenses linked to 286 catch permits. 143 tons of the total allowed catch have been issued to right holders, and 7 tons remain unallocated. said non-approvals have been granted for exemption from the vessel monitoring system requirements. 112 vehicles and 87 trawlers have been issued permits. 269 of the right holders have been paid social release payments to date, and the rest are being processed. With regard to monitoring, control, and surveillance, this directorate is responsible for one land-based patrol, monitoring of fish landings at landing sites, inspection of fish processing establishments, ensuring compliance of recreational fishers and abalone farmers, management of the vessel monitoring system, sea patrols and inspection of vessels at sea, conducting search and rescue missions at sea, attending to oil spills, participating in regional surface patrols, investigation of criminal cases, dockers and depots, investigation of syndicates with the police services, following up on cases brought to court and providing assistance to the prosecution, joint operations with other law enforcement agencies. This, honorable member, the status of the branch as we talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we wanted to also to show one slide that shows the main player, the main stakeholders in this industry. Just one
slide. While you're busy with the technology, we did receive a copy of the small scale feature report. We did, am I right? No?
No.
We did not. Here it is in your file. The minister just made mention to me that before she submits that to the cabinet, she would wish to hear comments. I also made a mistake of not introducing formally our new permanent committee secretary, Mr. Erskine Steiner, S-Y-M-E, he is here on my left. Doesn't he just study the left? Mr. Victoria, I'm sure you keep, you know, jumping every time the DG was mentioning, you know, DA, you know, DA would be, DA would be that. You know, for a moment I was like...
Somebody just repeated, I missed it.
DA's motivation to the presidency for Peter's court remains DA, you know?
Well, it's a shoe fit, put it on.
We shall give each other tools for comments on that small scale insurance policy. The draft is it, in August 27. So that we allow comments for the minister to set that into the draft before she submits to the cabinet. Mr. Stein will coordinate all those comments, if he can submit all of those to before we submit to the minister. You want us to comment quickly? We're not on the discussion yet. Mr. Philippe will add, and then we'll come back with the whole discussion. Okay, let's hear your hand, Mr. Stroller. I see you arriving and insisting we'll come to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at the file. And the draft policy for the small-scale fishery sector in South Africa starts at page 13. It starts with the background, that's two pages. Then there's the objectives of the policy, the need for the policy, that's the third page. And then on the fourth page, basically page 6.
I'm suggesting that you have a wrong document. We'll correct that. We'll give you the proper one.
Because, yes, as I see it, it's half a page.
We will give you the proper one.
The policy.
Mama, thank you. Just speak to the hand, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Because, ma'am, we are recording the proceedings of this session. That's why we think we need to speak to the mic. Hope you appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask, do you have a copy of that role player document?
Can we make copies of that if you don't? In the meantime, let's allow Mr. Bulege to proceed while copies are being made. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. This one was not included as part of the earlier presentation, but we thought it's a worthwhile information which might be important just to understand the main role players within the fishing industry. These are the key fisheries, egg fisheries. Yeah, under head fishery, you have ILJ Limited there with approximately 31% of the TAC. And then you have Sea Harvest, Baidu Fishing.
TAC will be?
Total allowable catch. The total allowable catch for.
Okay. If you could just, from now going forward, untag all the acronyms so that we are all in one.
Thank you. Then the second player there is Sea Harvest Limited, for more or less the same, basically 1% different. Viking Fishing, approximately 7%, and Food Corp, 6%. Now, with a small pelagic fishery, Oceana Group, 14%, Premier Fishing is 7%, Pioneer Fishing, 6.3%. And Food Corp and Hanzai Marine both around 4.2-4.9. With Lobster, Oceana still with the potential 12%, Premier Fishing 5%, and Food Corp 2%. So these are not the only fisheries, but we thought these are the main ones, and then they play an important role. Just to give a broader perspective of who are the key or the main stakeholders.
Thank you. Thank you. That then brings us to the conclusion on the part of a briefing from the department. I'm sorry, you can switch off the mic as well. Thank you very much. Members, the floor is open.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first one is on page 2. The proclamation, implications of the proclamation. It is not the first time we've got a presentation on the implications of the proclamation. It is not something new for us on this presentation. So for us, it's a portfolio. And for the sake of the rural communities also.
Sir, when you say page 2?
Yes, the very first page.
Oh yeah, the one with
yeah. Yes, and for us as members who represent constituencies, again I want to say today it's not good news to the communities on the coast. We want to hear progress, and progress in terms of when are we going to hear, when is the last proclamation going to be finalized and implemented. That's the first one. And then I'll go to page 5. Where is the advisors who advise the president, the two ministers? Where are they? Are they not keen and willing now to give again the advice they had given when the proclamation was formulated for the new department? Because if you eliminate the very key act that is giving us service delivery, because for us it's about service delivery. These technical things, it is not so important for us. We are not in administration. We are representing constituencies who voted for us. And I think the majority of the people who voted, the millions who voted, were the poorest of the poor. It was not those who benefited from this industry, from the wet gold. It was not people who were privileged. So those people, really, we need to change the lives of the people and not changing technical documents. And then to page 10. Okay, I've already addressed the speech. Page 12. The funds required for the fisheries function. The very first bullet. I really want to say, if we haven't got funds, how are we going to deliver? Can't we have also, Chairperson, a meeting with a portfolio, with Treasury? A joint meeting with the portfolio of Treasury, so that we can voice and raise our concerns about the fishery sector. This sector was neglected pre-94, and we are still growing the gap. We are not helping.
Thank you.
No, sir. No, sir. Okay. I will tell you if I finish. I haven't got much questions because this presentation is not so new. at page 16, 1, 2, 3, the fourth bullet, that will embark on it. Extensive public consultation on the 3rd of September. I would just like to know whether has this consultation already started? Page 17. My document is going further. I got this document and it's not my fault. It's yours is half. It's not my fault. Are you a young guy? It's not me. Page 17. Once the fourth bullet, 255 permits have been collected this far. What happened to the remaining one? And the social relief, the last bullet, the social relief payment. We were informed by the community that the social relief payments was not a social relief payment because people have lost their houses, their taxi vehicles, their vehicles, and even the municipality was going to evict people from their tents, and people are going to lose even their birthright of having a title deed for the first time in their life, of having my own title deed as a homeowner, now going to lose even that, according to the municipality that is run by, you know, by the opposition, who is not very friendly to our people in this province. So that social relief was just a relief for food on the table, not for people having a house to stay in. Page 18. The sea patrol, is it still from 8 to 4, or is it a 24-hour patrol that we are talking about here in this presentation? And one of the rescue, I want to advise the department to have those rescue satellite offices in all provinces, because the rescue of the Northern Cape is in the Western Cape, and they are not helpful when there are fishermen outside and being in danger. They just tell us that we will come tomorrow morning 6 o'clock. We are not able to go down to the Northern Cape now. So it must be for every province. It must not be a rescue office in Western Cape and the Eastern Cape hasn't got one, or the Northern Cape hasn't got one. So I would really advise that if you work on that model, also work to have station offices, satellite offices in all provinces. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we, members, adopt a three-person rule so that we can still come back for... Mama Palito raised six, in fact, questions so that we really are able to spread to the number of us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I would just like to have a broad answer on the effect of the cut in finance and the implications thereof. Just a little bit more around this that we've been given on paper. And the other one is on page 17, I see that there's a verse. There's been 286 applications that have been processed and issued, and there's been 296 applications for catch permits of abalone have been received. I'm very curious why 10 would not be, if we could have some detail on that. Okay, I'll stick with those two questions for a moment. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Let me serve on page 17. When it says 147 times of the total allowance has been issued to write for that, 7 times remain unallocated. I just want to know what is going to happen to the 7 times. It means the 7 times, there are no people who need 7 times to be allocated to. And again, on page 12, I don't understand something. Policy 1 is right. The government grant for the self-operation for the efficiency of the government has been. I just want to find out about the 41 million. What will happen for the 41? Because here it's intending transferring
100. What about the report here? The department will manage with 100. And where will the 41 come from? Okay. Thank you, Professor. Now I'll come back on to
I think those are the few questions so far.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on page 8, where I talk about the vacancies that are still in the department, about 117 vacancies. I only have to get clarity, Chairperson, whether these vacancies are for senior officials or junior officials, and where actually are they mostly in the national department or as maybe some wings of the department in the provinces. Understand there are some officials that are supported by the national department in provinces. And thank you.
Thank you. And so we will also few matters that are not necessarily in the briefing document here. We are more than free to engage in those as well. One of those is a matter that led to in one forum or in my own private discussion. We only have this one office where we are located that talks about processing and inquiry in relation to fishing. And my interest, in keeping with the point that you have started from, would be on a need to decentralize. Maybe if you have any plan in place, I'll be very keen to learn on the process going forward. For me, the issue is simple. You certainly do have the department offices in province. Now that we have the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, I would imagine for me it should be a matter of having to include, because typically this would have been offices that were only agriculture departments. We should really add as part of, I would imagine, some of those directions would also relate to those matters, where any of those provinces, especially the coastal provinces. And of course also in Mpumalanga, because we've got lots and lots of trout out there. We should really get to talk about the needs of the fisheries division within those, if you could hear a comment on that one. Thank you. The floor is yours, the Minister and Mr. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you,
Minister. I will take some of the questions and then the CDG, SDG, and the team will take some of the questions. Okay. I think firstly, on the question that was asked by Honorable Fadi, with regard to the proclamation, one would like to say that the issue of the finalization of the proclamation and the content thereof is something that is the subject of the discussion, ongoing discussion between ourselves, the presidency, and the Department of Environmental Affairs. So we will continue with that. We understand the concerns of the members that those discussions must be speeded up and the issues must be concluded. The questions around the permits and social relief, like the DCG, as well as the CIPATOL, the DCG to respond to them. On the question of the on rescue operations and their provincial location, I think we note the concern and comment from the honorable member, and it's something that we'll look at. and we'll look at how we can ensure that the seamless and provincial presence of those operations in the various coastal provinces. Okay, and with regard to the fund, the CFO will comment on it. The issue of course of the finance, the integration of the country called finance, the CFO will respond to that. And the 10% of APA loan, I would also like the PDG to comment on those ones. Then the last question I would like to comment on is one from the Honorable Chair about the presence of the DAF at the provincial level. I think that there are certain functions of DAF that are not only falling into the provincial department that are standalone. We do have those. But I think the issue of what we call the rebranding of the presence of this function at the provincial level is again something that we need to look at, because there are responsibilities of DAF, as you mentioned on the other side, for instance, they have to proud in this and normalize. People must be able to access our offices whenever they have issues that relate to us. I think it's a point that's worth looking at and working on. Mr. Selected?
Thank you, DJ. I would first probably give clarity on the part of the permit. The manner in which we have put this slide is primarily to try also and give guidance on how the process happened. I should probably maybe also indicate that as a department, the minister went out of her way to try and accommodate the right holders, because the fishery was closed for a long time. Some of them had lost the equipment and all that. So we went out of our way to support them so that they can acquire equipment and ensure that they go back to the water. But the problem then comes when you find that sufficient information during the application process has not been submitted, such as tax information and all that. That one primarily depends on them. We can also only guide them on how to acquire that information. But if their tax issues are not in place, we cannot in any way then approve the application, because it's part and parcel of the requirement. So some of those which are still outstanding are as a result of some outstanding information. On the part of the remaining tanks, of course, then it means that if some of the applications have not been approved, because these tanks are reserved for them, they would somehow then remain unallocated. In a nutshell, that's the response in terms of the reopening of the ABA loan and some of these outstanding applications. On the part of our ability to patrol the waters up in the Northern Cape 24 hours, because of shortage and insufficient funds, we have only 3 vessels and it cannot in any way cover up from the Northern Cape down to the KZN 24 hours. That is actually very, very impossible. On average, these vessels are out for 15 days, and we utilize mainly the small chase boats on areas that are designated, primarily requiring particular attention. And on the part of the sea rescue, the main responsibility actually lies with the National Sea Rescue Institute. But in a case where our vessels are on the vicinity, then on the basis of the communication systems that are in place, we are able to respond to some of these. But in future, probably, we will put systems in place to ensure that some of these issues are addressed. The question on the decentralization of our offices, we already have a plan in place now. We've budgeted for it, and we were hoping that immediately after the processes within the department, which are at an advanced stage of the implementation of the structure, we will also be implementing that particular program, where we have budgeted a certain number. If I'm correct, it could be about six offices, which will be piloted within the four provinces, which will be our pilot state for decentralization. And we are hoping that within it would be the Northern Cape, the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, and KZN. So we have a plan, it's ready, it's been costed. We are due to implement it as soon as the structure of the department is implemented. I'm not sure if there are any. Okay, the vacancies. On the part of the vacancies, first, it's as a result of the moratorium, because we cannot fill the positions when there's a process in place to reallocate resources within the department. But critical positions have been filled on a continuous basis. And I think the plan is in place, which the DG would articulate on how this will unfold. It is not only affecting the fishery branch, it's across the whole department. And mostly, these are fishery control officers. But also part of the transfer, there was a situation where some of the positions were reviewed as a result of us now readjusting from the transfer from environment to agriculture. I believe that DG, I may have covered all the other questions. If there's any other outstanding,
I'll invite the CFO to comment on the finances.
Thank you, teachers. Firstly, I want to comment on the vessels issues. I think we must appreciate that we have inherited an agreement that is binding. But the unfortunate part about that agreement is that when you look at the financial implications, they are not very clear. It's supplier managed more than the department managed. But then what we have done is that we have started with the procurement process, whereby we are going to issue a new agreement around this issue of vessels management. Now, you would ask me a question. How do you manage to move from 150 to, let's say, 100,000? What has happened is that operations, as a result of the cut of funds, are being affected. But we are currently in negotiations with National Treasury. I will deal with it as a full component of the funds that we are looking for. Then there's a question around the implications of, from a finance point of view, of not receiving funds. I think, yes, it is a big problem, and we are engaging the National Treasurer. We have been talking to DIA, but to no avail. But now what we have done, we have spoken to National Treasurer. We have given them the breakdown of what we need, and most of it, it has to do with compensation of employees. Currently, we've got 116 for compensation of employees, and we need 180. But in there, we are not including the OSD payments. We are not including overtime in there. Then also, with the issue of the government grants, I think if you look at the estimate of national expenditure, DIA in the previous year, we allocated 210 million. And as such, if we use the 5% increase, the department should be getting 220 million, but we are only going to get 100 million. I'm happy to confess that yesterday there was a meeting between our finance team with National Treasury. so that they can assist us to meet the requirements of the shortfalls. And the shortfall is indicated there is a big amount of 203 million. But what we have done as well, we said that service delivery must not stop. So the department is assisting the fund wherever possible. Then there's also an issue of projects that we didn't include here, but also with the issue of projects, the funds are still with DIA, and some projects are just waiting for us to give a business plan, but we assume that based on the adjustment estimate, we might be getting some funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. I think that we need to just make it quite clear that every time we come, we explain to the members that the proclamation is at the level of the presidency. And even if we come here and report to you every 3 months, every 5 months, the status quo will remain until the presidency solves the matter of the proclamation. This matter we cannot solve as a department. It is a matter which is worth, if the presidency has the right to decide on the proclamation, and the presidency is dealing with the matter of the proclamation. We have given our inputs to the presidency. I have signed off the proclamation, as the proclamation from the presidency was sent to me, I have signed it off months ago. The presidency then sends it to the Minister of DIA. I cannot get the Minister of DIA to sign it because I do not send the proclamation to the Minister of DIA. So we cannot every time come to the Portfolio Committee and be at the same almost stalemate. All we can come and say is that if this deadlock is not resolved by the presidency, and the deadlock rests now in the office of the presidency, the legal advisor and officer of the presidency wrote the new proclamation after we gave her input. We have not written the new proclamation because the matter lies in the office of the presidency. So we await the presidency's completion of the process of the proclamation. The only thing that we can basically do is ask the presidency almost on a weekly basis, write letters to the presidency on a weekly basis. But I cannot prescribe to the president what to do and how to do certain things. So basically what I'm saying is that we have done everything possible that is within our power and what is in my power as a minister to do. And if the Portfolio Committee has muscle, then I'm saying I cannot stop the Portfolio Committee from doing everything. But as far as the matter of the proclamation is concerned, it is worth the legal advice of the presidency. I have signed it off. They have to hand it to the Minister of DIA so that she can sign it off. She doesn't sign it off to me, she signs it off to the president. The same thing happens with the transfer of the funds. We have gone to the Minister of Finance to explain the intransigence of DIA to transfer the funds. We have written letters to the Minister of DIA and the Minister of Finance, met with the Minister of DIA and Finance. Now that we have a DG, I hope that our DG will have more muscle to speak to the DG of Finance. And if, again, we can put pressure on Finance and Treasury and DIA to hand over the finance. We are requesting again that the Portfolio Committee on its side also interact on this matter. But on our side, we have done our negotiations with National Treasury, who put pressure on National Treasury again with the Minister of Finance. The letter was written again. Another letter was written about 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I sent another letter. And discussed it. In fact, this is a matter we discuss almost on a weekly basis. But the movement is not ours. We can stand on our feet, stamp and throw a tantrum, which we are doing. The movement of that fund will only come through DIA and Treasury. So those are the two areas where, yes, we lobby, we fight, but I'm not going to be able to change the status quo unless the President, the Minister of DIA, and the Minister of Finance change their rules. And I think that the matter of the proclamation is not a matter for officials. It is a political matter which is in the hands of the President. So it's not a matter which the officials can resolve. It's a political matter which, unfortunately, only the President now can resolve, because the function rests with the President. Thank you.
That does respond to a number of questions being asked by members of Transport. Obviously, you certainly have a few more questions that either will arise out of the responses or will be coming outside of this, again, still relevant on the matter of what you're dealing with. So I am to Mrs. Butterfly and Mr. Chitoy.
Yes, on the...
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of the proclamation, I leave the question that I have written here out of the response of the Minister. But really, I need to ask this on this platform, that whether DEA is more powerful than the Presidency, and what is the logic there? The proposal I want to make, Chairperson, is that as a portfolio committee, because this really needs political intervention, this is too much. We are talking about living human beings here, lives of people. That is what we are talking here, and not political games or any technical games that are played here. What I would propose is that we would really like to invite, as a portfolio committee, those responsible in the Presidency to come and talk to us in this portfolio committee, because we are Parliament members. Page 17, 16 and 17. You would rather be unpopular than be popular for nothing. I would also like to ask the department to give us also a copy of the public consultation process that is going to happen, so that we can also see the venues and the dates and where will it be, so that if we've got chances in recess, when it will we are on recess, we can also go and attend those consultation processes. Thanks. And page 17. I would also like to ask the department to really help our people, to support, to have a support mechanism in place to help our people with these application forms, because some of them are really highly technical. People have to go and hire unnecessary lawyers to go and help them, and they are bedeviling our people on the ground. There was no money for them to go to school in the past, and there is no money now because they are older now. They can't go to school. So really we would like to have, they must have a support system so that we can eliminate the attitude of the past of not helping the poorest of the poor. I thank you, Chair.
Yes, I've got a follow-up question on the decentralization. I would like to know if, according to the plan that you've drawn up or busy drawing up, that would there be a cost increase in this decentralization? And If so, has it been weighed up against the possible operational advantages? What do you think are the operational advantages, if there are any? And if there is an increase in cost, shouldn't we postpone it until we have the budget allows it? That's the first question. The second question I have is pertaining to the stock levels and the allocations of the total allowable catch. I see that a lot of the fish stocks are in danger, and I also know that the fishing industry as it stands today is also struggling, and is there a plan taking into consideration the stock levels? How are we going to ensure that the current fishing industry can retain its profitability and therefore jobs in the line, and also address the problems of the smaller fishing communities? So that's basically my two questions. Thank you.
I must to get on the fence and refer to the briefing on the ABLO. I got a call yesterday from some business people in P. For Eastern Cape, it is said that they have 11 tons that must be spread over 7 zones. And I would be very keen to understand what is the split across the country on the tonnages of the abalone. The second one would be information. Having been briefed on the major role players in the fishing industry, I have thought we'll also get an aggregate here that talks more about the spread in terms of black economic empowerment, ownership, and management of these role players. The last one I wanted to make on the deep water hake. One briefing that I got was suggesting that because there is this overfishing, overexploitation of the fishing for fishing stock, you also do get a number of those big players literally removing even the coral reefs under the water. Those few little that we have in the country. To a point where there is serious even bycatch that is taking place. To a point where even those who total allowable catch, they can be exceeded by far. And the point for me is the carpets here continue to be the big players. As to whether are we able to monitor and what mechanisms are there in monitoring, especially that overfishing or over exploitation of that stock, that also takes into account the bycatch that happens to be happening quite rampant. Thank you.
Chairperson, sorry for taking up this time. To add to what Chairperson is saying, if there is information, can they also inform us about those huge tonnage of abalone that was that big vessels here with huge tonnage of abalone of South Africa that were overseas that is coming back here? From where is that abalone? Because we are always hearing about declining. Where does that abalone come from?
Yeah.
very valuable input of Member Paliso, Honorable Member Paliso, is exactly the reason which we had used to say that the total allowable catch for abalone has to be reconsidered for our people. And that if there was so much abalone to be poached, then certainly there was 150 tons of abalone to give to our people. So you have two groups of scientists. The one scientist would argue that the stocks are depleted. And another group will argue that there is sufficient stocks to reopen. At the end of the day, we were able to give people the conditional. We could conditionally lift the ban. And members should remember that the conditional lifting of the ban came at a very, very difficult cost. That 150 tons came with a number of conditions that Cabinet had set. And one of the conditions, Honorable Member Paliso, was that we could patrol and secure the seas in terms of the poaching of abalone. That was the first time that the vessel was caught and sent back. Was the first time in the history of South Africa that the vessel was caught and sent back. And I don't want to praise myself. I want to say, and at least I give acknowledgement that there is patrolling happening. When we're not just patrolling our people who go in and catch one abalone, we are now having the guts and the courage to take on the big players. Because that was a big player that is involved in the poaching of abalone. And all along they were just telling us, it's our people who poach, it's our people who poach. And no one was prepared to take on the big players. So with the sending back of that boat, I think it was a clear indication that we are prepared to take on the big players. And again, that there's, if these scientists are saying that there is no abalone, where did this 2,000 ton come from? But it also vindicated, it proved us correct in saying that there's over 2,000 ton that has been poached. So when we said there's 2,000 ton being poached, we were treated as if we were crazy or as if we were lunatics. And we kept on being sent back to say that there is no such thing. So the sending back of this boat is very significant in our history. The first thing is it shows that there's enough abalone that has been poached. The second thing that it shows is that we are willing to take on the big players. And the third thing it shows is that with this integrated strategy, where now SAPS works with SARS, works with the Department of Revenue, and I said SARS, with us, and with defense, as well as with Home Affairs and Justice, we were able to bring in one big player. But we still have a long way to go, Honorable Member Bali, so I don't think we've touched the tip of the iceberg yet. We are very far from where we want to be. But since we have lost Zulu, we can say that there has been movement. And the movement is not just to punish our people who catch 100 perlemoen, that's not even one ton. The rest is more of technical nature, which I want the department to come back to. Chairperson, I also want us to look quite carefully at what we have at the provincial level. At the provincial level, a number of provinces have combined agriculture, rural development, and land reform. And then fishing and forestry were never functions which provinces dealt with. So environmental affairs is then also with, in some instances, local government. And in only one province, environmental affairs is a standalone portfolio, and that is in the Northern Cape. The Constitution allows us to decentralize forests, and we're working on legislation to decentralize forests. We, however, are, when we do set up those offices, I'm also looking at how the provinces can have oversight over the fishing function, because we all know that if there is oversight at a provincial level, the responses that you get can be much quicker. But then we also need to decide, do we devolve the function of fisheries to a portfolio at the provincial level, which is already heavy loaded with agriculture, rural development, and land reform? Are we going to give them forestry and fisheries as well? So the configuration which we have at the national level is not the same configuration that's happening at the provincial level. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. The two other questions here, I will hand over to the CFO. The one on the cost implications of decentralization, and then I'll hand over to the DDG, the one of over-exploitation of the coral reef. The only question that the Honourable Paniso asked on the request on the program on public consultation on small-scale fisheries, that information will be made available to you, Honourable Member. We will be happy to get your support and the participation of members in this program. I also concur very fully with your suggestion that we should assist fisher folk with the application, because some of these things can be very technical and very expensive. So the state, ourselves, will position ourselves far better to help them when it comes to issues of application. Honorable Tutoi, on the issue of the depletion of stock, and the sustainability of fishing in general. I think we agree with you that fishing is not a finite resource. Of course, it's a reproducing resource, but it involves that you should be able to attend to it and manage it very well. That's why we've got we talk about total allowable cash, so that there's not overfishing. One of the issues that we want to strengthen going forward will be the issue of aquaculture. There are processes in motion and policies in place, and looking for resources to step up, to gear ourselves to promote aquaculture. But that's one intervention we could put in place to ensure that we replenish and expand the resource. I think the Honourable Chair, the question of the PE credentials of the stakeholders. I think what we need actually, Chairperson, is not a snippet comment on this. I think your question is very important. I think what we probably have to arrange is a comprehensive briefing to the portfolio committee on the status of black economic empowerment in fishing. It's a very important. So rather than responding to you now, I think it would be better that we organize a proper briefing. I also would like to say in that regard that one of the processes that we are looking at is to review the allocation of quota commitment to the criteria of the allocation. We are going to evaluate whether the long-term rights holders are they sticking to the conditions, because these are not just the unconditional licensing. So that process is at a high level. We've got a briefing on thinking around it last week. So it's one of the things that we think we would like to look at. Those are the ones that I thought we needed to comment on. You can take that one, DDG, and CFO, we can comment.
the part of the cost implications, it's a trade-off between a situation where someone has to travel big distances to the office only to find that maybe they left one document or another and they have to drive back. And also you tend to realize that they can only come back after a month. And the season is short and there are contractual agreements. And beyond that also, government's responsibility to provide services also comes into play. So we looked at all these other reasons because at the end of the day, we have to service the people. And the cost implications, again, are within reasonable means what we can manage. The thinking is that the existing staff is experienced enough to be deployed and start off those offices on a pilot basis. Based on the feedback, then we will determine whether it is a sustainable activity or not. On the questions of the stock levels, in reality, we can say that understanding how the system works broadly, it will make everyone else understand what fisheries is all about. How the total allowable catches are calculated, and once a certain figure has been reached at and is allocated accordingly, the key important factor now is the monitoring of the landings to make sure that the people, the landings are reconciled against the actual figure itself. Then that's how we operate, because now it's a balance sheet situation to say the total figure was so much, this is how it was spread across, and then at the landings, it gets also monitored to see how, and it gets reconciled in the end. So that's how the system operates. And the second issue now is the ecosystem approach, which is a system that we also apply in terms of fishery management. Say for us to sustain the fishery over a long period of time, a certain amount is left behind to regenerate itself. And it's an important responsibility that has to be undertaken by the fishermen themselves, including the key players. The issue of the coral reefs is said to be in the Northern KZN. And I believe that as it has been raised, the scientists will look into it as to what measures can we put in place to ensure that such issues are addressed. I'm not sure if I've covered the aspect which the CFO had concerned on. Yeah. Thanks.
The matter on coral reefs are eight, by the way. The issue really talks more to the big players being able continuously to over-exploit the fish species to a point where there is equally serious bycatch that takes place. Monitoring of such and being able to stop that becomes an issue for me, hence the question. Not so much on the coral reef, the fair. Yes, very few in the country, but up the north coast. Now, but more important for me, it becomes more of an issue raised earlier around the bycatch and over-exploitation of the fishes. I'm also told that with the nets that they use, as big as, you know, certain, you know, pools, I'm told, there is equally a net within that net that must make sure that even the smaller fish that are not necessarily meant to be catched or caught rather, they are equally finding themselves within those as the bycatch I refer to. What happens after catching? All those bycatch are literally thrown as dead fish out there. Whether as a department we are able to catch those, monitor those big players, is the issue that I'm raising, not so much on coral.
Well, Chairperson, let me allow our scientists to particularly speak on the issue of the net. But on the part of the monitoring, I've said that we monitor the landings. The landings is that whenever a fish docks at the landings, we have our inspectors who will inspect and weigh as to how much actually has been caught. And now the only issue that I seem a little bit worried about is the issue around the smaller fish that gets caught as a bycatch. But what we are doing permanently on a day-to-day basis is to monitor the landing and to reconcile the figure. Because if you're given, you were allocated one time, we have to reconcile every time around against the permit. Say this time around you had 500, 200, up until it reaches your one time. And then your business with us is done for the season. So ideally that's what we do at the landing. But now on the part of over-exploitation of even the fish that has not matured to that level, let me ask Dr. Prochaska to probably indicate what happens in that area.
Sure, thank you. Good morning, everybody. It's not an absolutely simple question to answer because we have a lot of fisheries, so it varies between the fisheries. But in the fisheries where there are problems with bycatch, for example, there are management tools in place to try to mitigate the damage on those bycatch species. We have, for example, in some fisheries, bycatch allowances so that people are allowed to catch a certain amount of bycatch. We know about that. We have set those resources so it's taken account of. And in other fisheries, there are gear restrictions to try and reduce the amount of bycatch that is caught. Obviously, there's more we can still do in this area. There always is. No such thing as a perfect world. In other fisheries, there are also different bycatch mitigation devices, such as escapement devices, so that marine mammals, turtles, etc., that find themselves in the nets can escape from those nets. And all of those measures are put into the permit conditions that the right holders receive, and they are compelled to comply with those permit conditions. There are also, we have both scientific and compliance observers which are deployed on the vessels, not on every fishing trip, but they cover a certain percentage of each fishery. And those observers, the scientific observers, monitor and record issues surrounding bycatch, etc. And obviously compliance observers, when they're on the award, they perform a compliance function. The other thing was a gear restriction. So I think I'm going to leave it there, and if you have any, want to go into any more depth in any of that, I'm happy to do so. Thank you.
Okay, members, I'm not too sure if we do have any further questions on the matters at play. Before we break for tea.
Thanks, Jefferson. Also, just to me, the honorable member body, so we have done the review of the fishing quotas. And the legal process on how to challenge which quotas were given to whom is going to be a battle. So the advice, the legal advice that we get, has to be very, very concise and accurate, or else we're going to be stuck in court for the next 4 years and get nowhere. So I think we are in the big players are in consultation, and we are in consultation. These lawyers have somehow a way of speaking to each other. It's not a matter of what we speak, it's confidential. What we plan and how we plan to take on these players. Obviously, these lawyers are also consulting with their counterparts and their colleagues. So, once we are ready to take on these players, and I think we have to be combat and ready. We will come to the portfolio committee because it's going to be a dirty and ugly fight. But it is a battle which we have already started. We are looking at all legal loopholes and legal avenues. And as I told members about this in my last briefing. They came together, put together a war chest. We know of the meetings which they had. Put together a war chest to fight us. We just need to also know how far our war chest is. And as you can see with the budget that we have, we are going to war without any soldier being properly armed or protected. So we are going to war without a budget. And I think that we must remember that when we take on these players, we must have the best lawyers. And the state is always in a habit of choosing very, very weak lawyers and losing all its cases. And I don't want to, please don't quote me wrong and say that I'm criticizing all the lawyers we've taken, because I'll now make enemies with the legal profession. But it stands to reason that if we lose all our cases, there must be something wrong with the people we got to defend us. So even our legal team, we must be having the best lawyers who can take on these big players, because these big players, certainly, they are prepared to fight us all the way. And you can only challenge the quotas which you have given. We've given the quotas, so we're challenging our own decisions. So that is the first complexity. It's not, we're not challenging anything that they did. We are challenging what we did ourselves. And so the first complexity is we are first fighting our own decisions. We are first having to say that our own decisions were wrong. And we're not saying then, firstly, that they were wrong. Our starting point is that we were wrong. And that is a very difficult battle to win fighting court. The last one I also wanted to just brief the honorable members on is that with the spread of being in ownership, we want members to also monitor and be very vigilant on the quotas which we have already given to black people. The very same black people are now selling those quotas which we gave them. And it means that we have given black people quotas, but they are selling it to white companies. And our approach is that we need policy on who owns those quotas. And for now, honorable members, we are saying that those quotas should stay in the hands of the state. It's like a state asset, a national asset. So that when we give it to you, you can't just sell it to whoever you like. So that it's like the land that we give through restitution. You can't use that land as collateral to borrow money. We cannot then allow our BE companies to get quotas and then to sell it again. I'm aware of a current case where a BE company has been offered 28 million for its quotas, and people are prepared to take 28 million and sell their quotas. But then it then reduces transformation, and it reduces the number of quotas that we, the amount of quotas that we have given to black. The last area that I also think members should be briefed on is that now the second round of the abalone is to develop markets for our people. It doesn't make sense that we have given them the quota, but they go and sell their catch to the same big companies and again receive close to nothing for their catch. So we are trying to establish them cooperatives for them, and in the small-scale fisheries policy, we are asking that they establish cooperatives so that they sell it as cooperatives.
and that you become less dependent on selling it again to sometimes shady dealers. Because even though we have now tried to stop poaching in the sea, you can say that there's still a poaching happening in the market, where the same unshady dealers, they don't need to go and poach in the sea now. They can simply buy it from our people who don't have market and who are desperate to sell. And the desperate situation that they are in makes them extremely vulnerable. If you are going to lose your house and your car or whatever, or you have already lost your house and your car, the first round of social relief was according to the budget we had. Whatever social relief we can give is totally dependent on the budget which will be made available to us. And it's a huge form of irritation that money for the project has not been transferred from deer to agriculture. It's a huge source of frustration. We can't come here and every time be a complaining session and bring our complaints to you. But, honorable members, it has come now. It's come to a time where we just have to say, we have to take off the gloves now. Thanks. So when it's not as if I'm becoming irritated in a person-to-person way. If you haven't delivered for how many months now? 13 months. At the end of the day, it is not going to be deal which will be held accountable. It is going to be tax and this portfolio committee. And when you go out on oversight, you won't be able to tell the people the money is not worth that. And deer sits with the money, but we sit with the complaints. I'm sure you can write a long list of complaints of people who want the money for their project. I'm sure every day we are overburdened. Mr. Seleke, every day you have sittings for people. So we get the sittings, but they sit with the money. And that is a huge, huge source of frustration. And the frustration, as I want to repeat, it's not one that is personal. It is one which is saying, can we solve our issues so that we can deliver? And if they don't want to give the money, let them then continue with the project. But don't let the people suffer because you want to hold on to money. Why do you want to hold on to money? It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the people and it belongs to taxpayers. And the committee has oversight over that money. Thanks, Chair.
I thought you would still respond to the split. I have made a point about 11 tons that it is split among seven zones per year. And as to what is the overall split in the country, as we speak now, on the Auburn tonnage. Do you want to?
I'll ask Mr. Seleke to respond, but not to say Chairperson. Unfortunate to fish, they are not loyal to geography. There may not be much of Auburn in the Eastern Cape, but
well, thanks, DG. Actually, he has wrapped it up in summary. What happens there, it's an experimental fishery. And being experimental is that we're testing to see how will it react. And now the permutation as to Why seven? I can also allow Dr. Prochaska to explain how they came about with a determination of that tonnage.
No, the overall split, not necessarily being confined to seven or 10 or 11, but the overall split. Where does what go?
All right. I'll answer that one. In the Western Cape, there were only some portions of the West Coast, mostly around the peninsula, and the area between Hanklip and Hans Bay, in which there was sufficient abalone to sustain a commercial fishery. And that's why historically the commercial fishery has always only operated in those zones. Those zones are broken up into, that area is broken up into zones A to G, and there's a total allowable catch is allocated for each of zones A to G independently. Then the Eastern Cape, there was no fishery before in that area, so there's very little information available on how much abalone is in that area. There's a small amount of information available from work that has been done by Rhodes University, and we've used that as a basis for, in essence, guesstimating that we can safely take that amount of tonnage from those areas in the Eastern Cape without risking collapsing the resource. In time, if we run that as experimental fishery, once we get some information coming in, we may be able to increase that allocation. But at the moment, that is considered, on the information we have available, that's considered a safe catch limit in that area. There's insufficient abalone in KZN. They really only go up to the wild coast, and then the resource peters out. They're a cold water species. They don't like the warm water, unlike us.
Okay, you want to shift in the last one? Maybe allow Mr. Tutoi and then you come on the other side.
Well, Chairman, I don't know if you're shocked as I am, but I was shocked to hear that the minister is planning on going to war with their own industry, especially if you're putting a war chest together with taxpayers' money. I hope not. Thank you.
Jefferson, I welcome the war because this war has to redress what went wrong in the past. I really welcome it as a portfolio member because it was unacceptable to give Oceana and Premier. I know some of these players, yes. That's why I asked this list because I know them. Not on paper. I know them there where they operate and how they operate. And we can even give the minister information. He really welcomes the war. Because this war is for the poorest of the poor. To redress the imbalances of the past. We can't give these players continuously 15 years rights and not giving any to those who worked all these years, these permits, these rights for these people. When are we going to... They are dying poor. Not even getting a fair pension. Not even getting compensation. What are we saying? What are we governing? What are we talking about democracy? Which democracy? If we are allowing these imbalances to go forth, we are all of us are taxpayers. All of us. All these years. The risk that the department is taking, we welcome it. Chairperson, I also want to say that the advisor, it's a pity the minister is out of here, the advisor is here. I'm allergic for advisors, but they are doing their job. Because sometimes it's an advisor that is giving the wrong advice. And we can say that out of this proclamation, it's because of the wrong advice we are sitting with a proclamation still coming. It's the advisor. So that person who advised that 15 years to be given to the big players, that advisor, he is the one who is supposed to go to court with the minister and go and defend his own decision because his advice influenced the decision for the big players to get the rights for 15 years, to grow the gap bigger, for the rich to be richer and the poorer to be poorer.
would be very interesting to understand whether the big players we're talking about, how many are South Africans?
No.
It would also be very interesting to learn. I guess that will also be part of the report, might wish to. I think, members, we should go for tea now and then come back and get the very last questions on the matter before we get to the briefing on the presidential session with RSA. Mr. Geda?
No, just
you've been the very, very last.
Yeah, just addition to what you're asking. Any of these big players be compliant? One would like to know. They be compliant or not?
Okay, members, why don't we go out for lunch, for tea rather, sorry, and then come back and then just wrap up on this one before we get on to the very last item. Thank you. We will come back at 10 past 11. Thank you. Oh yeah, you were asking about the component and the compliance of these stakeholders, or rather not stakeholders, role players. And also Mr. Spalito. If I heard the DG well, he was actually indicating that rather than giving a snippet on this matter related to BEE, we rather get a comprehensive picture of what do we have. The minister also made mention of the fact that some of our black entrepreneurs, they also are disappointing us. Like a similar case, I'm sure you're aware about it, where in our farmers, black farmers, they get a piece of land and suddenly they're selling that piece of land back to the white farmer, which is quite a serious disappointment. While the striving towards meeting the 30% target by 2014, we're literally doing a reverse, on that. Now, these are the challenges that we're confronted with, that we need to seriously look into. Mr. Spariso, you are having your very last, and then we go to the briefing on the presidential session with the RBSA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I reserved one thing because the minister was out. Because of frustration, we didn't even welcome the new DG. Because honorable member Abraham was always saying that this is a Hollywood department, everybody's acting.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, we've got a DG now. We are not saying acting DG anymore. We welcome him, but I think while we are welcoming him, the broom is new. It must sweep clean for now. Because when the broom is going to be an old one, it is going to be a broom that is going to sweep and leave some dirty behind. But we welcome you, DG. While we're welcoming you, DG, I also want to remind the DG that please, while the other processes are unfinished business, while other processes are taking their course, please, the department must be led by the DG putting a plan in place for the fishing community so long, a interim one or a short-term one, whatever we want to call it, so that while we are busy with these long-term processes, there must be a explain in the next briefing for us, so that we can also have an insight in the plan, so that we can look and help you screen the plan, advise you, not the wrong advice, the right one, and to help you so that you can go along with the fishing communities in consultation with them, take them with. Don't make decisions without them. Make decisions with them. Nothing about them without them. Minister, here is the part I wanted you to hear. It's, we are really losing some of our BEE gains, but the reason is, I'm not saying they must sell their quota. People were given rights, but there were no gear support mechanisms in place for them. The very persons who are the quotas are being sold to, it's them who are the marketing companies for the smaller, not for the small, for the subsistence fishers. The big players, they are the people who are saying, we are the marketing companies for you. And that is the problem, and that is where the hiccup is, Honorable Minister. So it's not because people are selling because they want to sell. People are selling because there is no market for them, Honorable Minister. And they don't know where to go after they have catched their tonnage. That was the problem. I know physically about that. I can even give you a document that can outline you what is happening with our small, I don't say, want to say player, with our subsistence fishers. I do have a document that I can present to you. There is information that I'm not going to give you here around this table because it is very sensitive about the big players. But I can make available some information for you, Minister. What I also want to propose to the department, please go and consult with the communities of the fishing coastal towns. Mm-hmm. They will give you the correct information, what happened and where, what is the current situation happening on the coastal towns, Honorable Minister. Just to give you the right information, they will give you. Yes, get your scientific information, your what, but please, go to the recipient. They will give you the very, very accurate information of what were the developments and what are the current situation. And I also want to say that we must, as this department, have a self-introspection. Go and look yourself in the mirror and see where did we go wrong in terms of people getting quotas and selling the quotas again back to the big businesses, while they knew the big businesses have got half of their quotas that were supposed to be allocated to them. There are reasons there, therefore, to happen, and those reasons will you get into the community. And as Chairperson, I thank you for this opportunity, and I also thank that we've got a new DG now. We hope things will move faster and differently. The President said in SONA, things must be done differently. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you for those concluding remarks, Palitso. I take it that the meeting is now adjourned. Minister, why don't you just get quickly and then before you give an overall.
Oh, okay.
And note that Mr. Detroit, note that Mr. Tom. Can I say it, sir?
Yes, thank you. I'm referring to this very informative piece that has been given to us on the major role plays within the fishing industry. It's just a few remarks I want to make as I see it, and maybe bounce the ball back off here in the committee. If I'm going to start with the lobster fishery, the third one. Now, you can see that there has been listed three, the top three. And the biggest one has got 12%, and the third one has got 2% of the TAC. Now, that means that if you have a player in the market that is the biggest and he's got 12%, it really is not much. If you look at your big groups like Pick and Pay, Checkers, most people, if you look at their market shares in the market, it means that the lobster fishery, there's not much movement we can move there. It also means that if you add up 12, 5, and 2%, you get 19%. That means that 81% of all the other players who's got 81% of TAC, they have less than 2%. Am I correct? Because this is the top three. So there's not much movement there that you can have a strategy around. And the same with the small pelagic fisheries. Is that the correct pelagic? Okay. There the total is 24.5%, which means, say, 75% of all the people that catch those kind of fish, 75% of them have got a lot less than 4.2% of the market. Am I correct? That's obvious. And there again, the top one has only 15% more or less. So it's also not critical. So what I'm trying to say here is that if I could get some response around my analysis, that there's not much movement here in terms of a strategy to empower people. Then on the first one, you can see that this is the high capital input industry, where you have very expensive boats, very high diesel accounts monthly, and that type of thing. And there it's a reverse. There you've got the 75% and the other 25%, which also does make sense. So as I see it, that the partner has a big challenge in any way to move here with a strategy, and whatever your strategy may be, you are between a rock and a hard place. So if I could get some comments around these observations they made, I mean, bounce my ball back, please, and I'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I also want to extend a warm welcome to one of our former parliamentary colleagues who has now become the DG. I trust that his appointment will now bring stability in the department. Knowing him as we do, I know that he will be able to give leadership and direction. That is what we require most. Anybody that believes that the department up to now was totally 100% functional, was living in cloud cuckoo land. It was not. Challenges, Chair? Major challenges. And there are several issues, Chair, where we can make a major difference. If we are prepared to put our shoulder to the wheel, we can make a major difference. Chairperson, with regard to the topic under discussion, what I would like to add on is that there is a lack of commitment. There is a lack of integrity. How is it that in 15 years we have been unable to develop our people towards becoming commercial fishers? We have failed miserably. And part of the problem, Chair, is that we did not put mechanisms in place to assist those people by taking their hand and walking the road along with them. Without that, Chair, you are not going to develop a viable commercial sector of black people, involvement of black people. You cannot give people quotas for fishing, and that person does not have the necessary resources, and of course the necessary markets, in order to get something out of that particular quota. And what I'm asking the DG is that we need to develop mechanisms where we will walk the road with such people. And don't try to do too much at one time. Even if we take a couple of people and their communities and build them up to successful commercial enterprises, I would say that we can sit back and say we've done something. Now, Chairperson, this is not only in the fishing industry. Do we know that major companies like what Mr. De Toy mentioned now, your ShopRites and your Pick and Pays and your Woolworths, are sourcing a lot of their veggies and stuff from neighboring territories? They are getting their stuff from as far afield as Kenya, as far afield as Rwanda. Whereas we have the people, we have the land share, 90% of our land reform projects have failed. Why, Chair? Precisely because we did not walk the road with those people. We gave them the land, gave them a couple of things, and turned our backs on them. Let's be honest about it. Let's call a spade a spade. And unless we change that, Chair, we will sit here 5 years, and after I'm buried and dead and buried, the next generation will sit here and still talk about the same things without seeing anything happening on the ground. All I'm saying, Chair, to my former colleague, is that you have a heavy responsibility. It's the administration that has to carry out tasks. And I trust that with your leadership, that you will motivate the people in the department. I know that there is a great deal of motivation required, that the people will work as one to see that we put the country and all the country's people ahead of everything. One final thing, Chair. Mr. DG, I appeal to you. Think about turnaround times. We cannot have a department where no decisions are made. We cannot have a department where for months on end a particular issue, for argument's sake, is being discussed without bringing it to finality. Because the commercial sector outside cannot wait for us to work until thy kingdom comes. And there are many issues, but I will discuss it with you, which I believe we can help to turn around in the process, empower our people, empower our country, and increase jobs. Although agriculture's total contribution towards the national GDP may sound minimal, it has the potential of creating a number of jobs. And you know, if you take the farmer, for example, the farmer, Chairperson, is also the provider of social security. He or she is also the provider of housing. He or she is also the provider of schooling. All these things are happening in the rural landscape. We need to harness this and grow it further. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, members, we must also mention that the new DG is not unfamiliar with what we are dealing with here. As chair of the Environment Committee at one point, he also would have been playing a role of an oversight like we are doing here now. Members, I think that should be it, and then we'll allow the minister just to round up and then go straight. She's got to be out here by 12, unfortunately. But we'll continue and then wrap up after she's left. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm glad that you are thinking that the DG is not unfamiliar with these matters. And I also want to say that we shouldn't just see the new DG as a politician. The DG does have a management, a master's in management. And unless we are saying our own universities have no credibility in training people, he has a master's in management from the University of Witwatersrand. So I don't want us to just see our new DG as a politician. He's also an administrator. And I also would like us to acknowledge the fact that Mr. Peter Kabete has worked very well under very difficult circumstances when he received very little support from the department and managers in the department. So I don't think we should forget about the role that Mr. Peter Gabbett has played, because we expected him to go into a difficult situation, and he didn't drown. He didn't inherit an Olympic-sized swimming pool, but the foundation which he laid, we can only build on. He has laid a very good foundation. And when it comes to the performance agreements, our outputs and our performance assessments, he has almost single-handedly driven the process of our performance agreements and our implementation agreements. So I want to formally acknowledge the role which he played in a very, very difficult situation. And it's also through him that we have a single department today. So he isn't handing over the department as he received it. He's handing it over in a better condition. And one, sometimes you only thank people when they're dead, or you only acknowledge people when you go and read their obituaries. I wouldn't, he's still too young, so I may die before him and never have an opportunity to read his obituary. But then the honorable member did twist. You know, this observation which you made is a very, very valuable one. If you look at the major role players within the fishing industry, what they have cannot be termed as the be-all or the ultimate of fishing. And as you correctly say, when it comes to the lobster, what they even have is very small. So, at no stage did I say that I want to take away their quota from them. And please, it should not be interpreted as I want to remove. When we gave the small rights holders the abalone fishing quota, we did not take that 150 ton. We didn't take it away from anybody. We allocated the 150 ton to the small rights holders as a total allowable catch, am I right? Without taking it away from anybody. We are saying that our only mechanism to assist our people was to say, let's patrol our seas and our water more effectively. And when we patrol our seas and our water, we will be able to have more fish available for all role players. And in that way, we have been able to give our people 150 tons. Patrolling our sea more effectively and efficiently has already resulted us in recovering 2,000 tons of fish that were poached at the low. That was the first point. So at no stage did we say that we are going to take people to court because we want to remove rights from them. At no stage. And the message shouldn't go out that we want to fight the role players, the major role players, because we want to take away their rights. That would be totally misguided. If you look at even the small pelagic fisheries, you would see that some companies only have approximately 4.2% and others have 6%. Now, I have never ever said that the minister in charge or the previous minister made a mistake. And I've also never said that I'm in disagreement with my own decision. What we are sitting with is simply a system which has unintended consequences. The first unintended consequence is, as Honorable Member Paliso said, that people are selling their quotas because there is no market. Where did we go wrong in terms of allocating quotas if people are selling their quotas?
where did we then, where did we go wrong? Or what haven't we done to assist those people? What have our weaknesses been? So it is, I'm not pointing a finger, I'm simply saying there have been gaps in our decisions, and when we implement decisions, some of those gaps now come out in a way which works against our communities when we start implementing decisions. Even the decisions which we take, if we start implementing decisions and there's gaps, nothing stops us from reviewing our decisions so that our policies can be better implemented. Nothing stops us from reviewing our decisions. So, when we speak about reviewing quotas, the first thing people jump to conclusions is that I'm going to take it away. And I've at no stage said I'm going to take it away. I have at no stage said that the revision is going to be punitive. We revised the abalone quotas. It ended up being a win-win situation for our community. So a revision doesn't mean that you have to kill one to give to another. At no stage, and it also a revision also doesn't mean that you are pointing a finger at the previous minister or pointing a finger and saying that what you did was wrong. What we did and what we are doing is to say, as Honorable Member Paliso said, we must have a comprehensive picture of what is being done. And I'm sure that we all agree on. We must be correct in the comprehensive picture. And secondly, we must be correct in compliance. And the compliance includes that we then need to say the different role players in the industry. If it comes to, as you said, honorable members, if it comes to the over exploitation of fishing stock, those are part of our bigger plan and our bigger picture. Even if our players are serious about the bycatch taking place, then, and if we are serious as a department about the bycatch and other problems that we have, then we have to go in and monitor. We have to go in and make sure that there is compliance. Now, when we spoke about compliance in Abalone, it was frowned upon, but there had to be compliance. If we do not have compliance, we are going to be responsible for the total depletion of our fishing stock. The review, once the review is there, we'll have a total comprehensive picture of what is going on. And then, only then, we'll be able to present the picture to all role players. So we mustn't jump the gun. And please mustn't jump the gun. And we please mustn't create pandemonium and panic. Because there is no need to panic. And there is also no need, if you look at the manner in which we have conducted ourselves, we allocated 150 tons of abalone rights, total allowable catch for abalone. It was in a responsible manner, it was without confrontation, and it was without any controversy. And that is what we seek to do. Lastly, Chairperson, this is a process we which includes consultation. You cannot take decisions without consultation. And I categorically stated it would be premature for me to meet with all of these major role players if I do not have a comprehensive picture of what is going on. So once we have this comprehensive picture of what is going on, we'll meet those role players and we'll even invite those role players to this portfolio committee so that we do not speak for each other and end up making assumptions about one another which is not true. Likewise, with the Adelum, we have now kick-started the small-scale Adelum fishery industry. And I'm appealing that we read the draft small-scale fishing policy before we make value judgments and before we think that this is going to destabilize the entire industry. Our draft policy is there. I'm appealing to you, all members, please go through our draft policy very carefully. And I'm also appealing to the media, please go through our policy carefully. Please do not create pandemonium and a crisis when there is no crisis for the moment. And as a member, the tweet, you correctly said, Honorable Member, sorry, I'm not calling you Honorable Member, we gave you this information of the major role players precisely because we don't want to end up beating a stick and using a big stick to beat our commercial fishers. They also have people that they employ. So we can't take their people out of employment to create new employment. The consideration should also be given to the people that they employ. They also employ workers. The overall comprehensive picture will be given to us in terms of a breakdown of what exactly is happening. And now that the DG is there, we'll also fast track the appointment of the DDG fishery. What is that DDG called? What is his position? Sorry? The DDG in the new organogram? Sorry, fisheries? Management. Okay, but anyway, the title includes it. It's got some fishy thing in it. I don't know. I don't want to say fisheries or what, but it does have a fishy smell to it. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the members.
Thank you, Minister. Mr. Tutoi, you know, Minister does indeed call you honorable member. You know, that went very long to a point where, you know, Baba Toi Kulu, Inkosi Ukuthelezi, Baba, to a point where when I listen to him all the time, you know, mentioning that word, you know, I literally hear him saying, horrible number, horrible number, horrible number. So long ways, you know, honorable number. I literally hear him all the time. He's not saying horrible, but that's how I listen to him saying, you know, horrible number, horrible number. So you run a risk of that. Minister, thanks for your kind words, and also maybe we should, without really waste of time, let's quickly rush as you are about to leave by 12. The briefing there. Thank you. You might just wish to get onto the specific, you know, way forward areas without really taking much of your time.
Thank you, Chair. We will ask the Cabinet to spoke about the key starting points that he attended the meeting on.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, the Minister, and the members present here. I will very quickly go through this draft notes of the presidential meeting. There was a request of a meeting by AgriSA to meet with the President to discuss a number of issues pertaining the commercial sector in terms of farming in the country. That meeting was allowed and it was attended by the President, ministers, and also AgriSA. The couple of issues that were discussed there, it was more critically one to address issues that relate to farm safety and how the interaction in that regard into that particular area needed to be dealt with. And also the issue of the 4.5 million surplus maize, which was very critical by that particular time, was under discussion, including the issues that were raised by the Competition Commission to allow farmers to pull that maize. And then and also the interactions between the AgriSA itself and the minister in the department in terms of creating the targeted jobs. You recall that there is a target number of jobs that must be created by the commercial sector so that to keep that going. And also to in detail look at what will be the role of the commercial sector in dealing with the issue of food security and also growing agriculture in general. So those were the key areas that were on the agenda for that particular meeting. The AgriSA team itself introduced the issues that they were brought to the President, and they also indicated that in the past they used to be interacting with the President by a bigger group, but in this instance it was only the representation from the farmers. The representation from the other sectors that used to come was not there, so that needs also to be strengthened and that group to be formalized. Also the processors to be brought on board so that it's not only the farmer presentation. And then what also came from the meeting was that they indicated that there were attempts that were brought by AgriSA itself for the unification of the agriculture trade bodies, including NAFU and BUSA, as a uniform model. So that those were the things that they raised there, and the importance of commercial agriculture in the economy, specifically looking at the employment that the commercial sector is contributing, and also issues of food security in the country, which the indication was that 60% of the people that live in cities get fed by mostly the commercial sector, which they are not directly dependent on the land. And then they also brought the issues of the need to promote agriculture as a good, attractive career to young people, and also the cornerstone for food security, so that we improve on that particular situation. And also there was a need to promote South Africa through agriculture as farmers move into African countries. There was a debate on that one that was discussed during that meeting to indicate what will be the basis and how should we support the farmers that are going farming into Africa itself, and also what are the agreements that need to be in place before these farmers move into farming in Africa. And then also talking about the good relationship between AgriSA and government, and the accessibility of government departments and ministries to AgriSA, not only agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, but there are other ministries that they require to have access to, which include safety and security, rural development, and land reform, and so on and so on. So there was a couple of those that were indicated and mentioned to be part of this.
There was also a couple of challenges that were raised during the meeting. Mostly of those was that there is a need to firm up cooperation jointly in terms of dealing with solution policies and programs, so that we begin to talk to each other when we deal with those issues in terms of problems, so to cooperate in that regard. And also a discussion was held around on the challenge of the decline of jobs within agriculture itself, and how do we deal with that particular situation. There was an indicating that agriculture created about 35,000 jobs, and they could have been done better at the system, and there was cooperation and interaction between those. And how do we begin to arrest further decline so that we can begin to improve enormously on those jobs within agriculture itself. There were issues that were discussed around the tariff, discouraging the plunging of wheat, and thus South Africa is to import. So we had to deal with a number of these issues which the sector believes are a barrier for South Africa to begin to plant crops like rice, which because of the issues of the tariffs. The urgent need for agro-processing was also raised and discussed there, that we had to begin to process our own stuff. There was discussion that a lot of our production, primary production, is exported without processing, so we have to begin to gear up our agro-processing and value addition in the country. Because most of these things that we sell out unprocessed, they come back again in the country as processed, which means those jobs are created somewhere else but not in the country. There was a need to facilitate the recovery of agricultural industry, which actually has impacted negatively on the global economic crisis. So those are the things that we have to begin to build up on the contribution of agriculture in the GDP on the country, so that we can improve on that. And also at the same time, looking at the global market, where we will be competing with subsidized markets. So those are the things that we have to begin to work on and get the necessary support, maybe by tariffs and other subsidies that we may need to work around. And then they also raised the issues of conflicts within the land reform program itself, to give indication that the issues of property rights and the speed at which land reform is being managed, we may need to improve on that particular area. So those were the issues, and then lastly, the president was invited to the AgriSA Congress, which is to be held on the 17th of October. We as a department, we have then to do a follow-up and check the availability of president on that particular invitation. Then from that discussion, different ministers made responses into what was raised by AgriSA, of which a number of ministers indicated that there was already interactions that were held with AgriSA. Within agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, there were interactions. Within safety, there were interactions, and also within rural development. Trade and industry has already interacted with AgriSA. So those responses were also captured. And then there was also then a proposal that the team of ministers will come together and meet with AgriSA eventually, so that a proposal can be formulated before the next meeting with the president takes place. So what we're going to be doing is that in the coming Thursday, we're going to be presenting this and discussing it in the ministerial cluster, and then that formulated task team of ministers will be formed and then interact, and then they will also meet with AgriSA so that the report can be generated that can be transmitted to AgriSA on those issues that we discussed. So that is the status of the meeting currently. A number of issues have been captured now in this document that were raised, so that we can then pull together and finalize the report that goes to the president as a proposal on the way forward on how to deal with these issues and these meetings as a way forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you want to add? Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a process matter. The first is that in the cluster meeting, of this Thursday. The cluster will be discussing the matter. And then on the 14th, in a week's time, on Tuesday, a week's time from now, the ministers will again be meeting with the president. And then a further meeting will be held. So the future of we've discussed the future of engagement, and AgriSA will also be requested to form part of the delivery forum, as we have discussed with the delivery agreement with the president. So AgriSA will not be treated as a single stakeholder, but all our other organized agriculture, as well as workers, farm workers, will be part of our delivery forum. And then whatever matters are raised will be taken up in those delivery forums. That is just a matter of the way forward, Shepherd. Thank you.
Remember, the main object of this briefing, really, number one, come from our members here of our committee. One of the stakeholders in agriculture is called the AgriSA, has had a session on a presidential with the minister and ministers. Members showed an interest on the outcome of such. As a result, the main object of the briefing really would be for us, number one, to get a sense of the issues, number two, processing of such also would have to relate directly with the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. I think that should be the understanding that we all must have going forward on the issues. The issues are the kinds of issues that equally we have and are continuously dealing with. On the 17th of September, as we are going to be engaging on agriculture transformation public hearing, we'll also get a briefing on tariffs and subsidies, both from yourselves and also from DTI together. The agro-processing matter also is a matter that is closely linked with transformation as well. But those are the details that I'm sure we'll get into when we arrive at that point. Stock theft continues to be an issue that concerns us all. We have made a point in our last session that we shouldn't hear many dreams again and many plans again on stock theft. We should hear more action. That shall have taken place, not to be, not to take place, but that shall have been taking place. In other words, we need to hear more of implementation and many more other issues I'm sure members are quite familiar with. I'm not sure if we should really entertain much of any discussion on these issues, if any. Minister, whilst we are still thinking, I see your hand, Mr. Brom, which seemingly is the one and the only hand here. The minister, before she leaves, she also thought that it wise that she should shower us with some gifts which we all have to declare. Upon arrival in Parliament. Maybe let's just give over to you, Mr. Brom, a very short one.
Chairperson, no, I think what we've heard is naturally pleasing in the sense that the President acknowledges the important role that agriculture can play. Chairperson, I've just got one or two points here, but these points are actually meant for the DG. To take note of, that we don't have to wait for certain committees to draw up reports and things.
things like that, growing food is something that cannot wait for reports. These things must be continuous. And I want to leave one or two thoughts, Chair. If you take, for example, currently our country imports broilers, that's chicken. We are net importers. We also import beef. In a country where we have so much maize that is a surplus, which we could have turned into feed and produce our own chicken and become totally self-sufficient. Produce our own beef and become totally self-sufficient. These things need certain interventions, Chair. And I want to leave it in the lap of our DG, that he would proactively work on these issues so that he could have a plan as to how these issues can be catered for. Chairperson, I've got friends who run major supermarket franchises. And I had the occasion of meeting the CEO of one of these major supermarket chains. And I was told about the sort of assistance, Mr. DG, that these companies were prepared to give the department in order to help source veggies and stuff that you buy on their shelves locally. And the argument was that they got precious little assistance from the department. They have a dedicated team, this particular company, I'll give the name to the DG, where they are willing to be of assistance to our people to grow food, which can be bought up by them, where they would give them technical assistance and things like that. And I think that the future means, Chair, that one has to take hands. You must work with others so that you can grow the sector and you can grow our people in the process. Chair, with regard to the whole question of the declining of jobs in agriculture, it is a major worrying factor. I think we've shed in the last 10, 15 years about 900,000 jobs. We haven't added on anything. We had Azgiza said that it would create, if I can remember correctly, 400,000 jobs per annum over a five-year period. We have precious little. Instead, we've actually lost jobs. So I'm a practical guy, Chair. I don't like these airy-fairy stories. I like to see things happen. And I would like to advise the DG that have lesser meetings, but have meetings that are productive, where a plan can come on the table, and then you work on the plan and try and implement that plan. And I say, Chair, that one of the first things that we need to do as a department is engage those sectors, the commercial sectors, that are distributors of foodstuffs, and see in which way can we link up creating the market for our people. Chair, we've got another problem. Problem is that we are not the only ones that are involved in agriculture, not the Department of Agriculture alone. You have the Department of Rural Development. It is also involved in farming enterprises. For example, the other day, one of our lady members moved a member statement, read a member statement in which she said that a particular project, which is in my constituency, there will be 120 dairy cows delivered there very soon. I see, Chair, when I was there at that project, and I was told about the 120 dairy cows coming, I want to finish up here. I warned them, because a dairy cow is like a baby. Got to be treated like a baby. You don't just bring a whole lot of dairy cows and put them through a machine and think that they're going to produce milk. No, sir. You first got to have your feed flow. You've got a lot of things to do. So you see, again, we are doing things in the wrong way. All I'm saying, Chair, is that if we do things the correct way, we will, A, be saving a lot of money. Secondly, we will be saving a lot of heartaches. That we will not be setting people up, creating expectations. Yes, 120 dairy cows, each one is going to give average of 20 liters per day. Hey, we're going to see a lot of money flowing. It's not as easy as all that, Chair. So if we can engage with the sectors, create the markets, assist with technical advice, they are willing to come to the party. There's one project that's taking off in my province, Chair. where we are going to use maize now profitably, and each time you import a kilogram of chicken, yeah, you are importing 1.25 kilogram of maize with it. That project is going to empower at least 60 black entrepreneurs who will be growing chickens. It will empower 300 permanent jobs in the abattoir, because then the chickens have to be slaughtered. And we hope to slash the number of kilograms of meat that we have to import from elsewhere. Let us make it homegrown. Let us support our own people. Let us create opportunities. Let us create jobs. And I'm glad that I'm associated with that project, where an investment of 500 million rand will be involved as a member of that particular project. So, Chair, all I'm saying is that we've got certain things that can be done. It must be done. We need the will, and we need the commitment to do that. As long as we have that, Chair, we will go a long way. And that's my advice to the new DG. Chair, thank you, Chair.
Following after you, Mr. Dutoy, we have another millionaire here. I thought when you were saying, Mr. Abram, that we should have lesser meetings, I was almost hearing you saying, DG, you must now turn everyone into being an extension officer in the department. I think the comments are quite valued. These are food for thought. I thought we should allow, Minister, that you listen to the comments before you go. Let's allow the Minister to continue with the process of personally, you know, handing over. That's how she prefers practically to be involved. And thank you that you all receive it from her directly. Whilst he's busy doing that, the DG would wish to make a comment.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to respond to Honorable Abraham. I think what we are looking at doing around the issue of the maize supply, all these other initiatives were taken around accessing market, etc. But more importantly, we have got a task team. We have a task team that is preparing for World Food Day. But within those preparations for World Food Day, we want to convene a consultative forum, which is what was recommended here on the first page of the meeting with the President, which talks about a meeting of farmers, silos, and traders, okay, to look at what we do domestically with the surplus needs that we have. But we want to link those initiatives to the challenge of food security, to the challenge of ending hunger. So a whole comprehensive approach to ensuring that we've got a domestic market, domestic participation in this area. So we're already working on it. I attended a meeting on this last week. This meeting on Thursday also reinforces the initiative around this. I'm a new DG. I have persuaded one of my colleagues who has been there to convene a meeting of the relevant DGs so that we process the fact that already was done last week. So we're moving in the kind of direction that you're talking about. I wanted just to confirm and affirm what you're saying. Thank you.
Okay. Members, I think we are done with both the briefing and also the earlier session on fisheries. Now we have just received a gift from the minister. I can only just make one quick comment, Minister, even before you go, on the gift itself. You know, the Khoisan community, they get to be very finicky about a number of things. Rightfully so. I read the name here of the boat, Sarah Bartman. It's actually wrongly spelled Sarah Bartman. It's B-A-R-T-M-A-N-N. how generally, you know, they, I'm mentioning it because I work quite closely on this project in my constituent area called Anki, on this whole Sarah Bartman Heritage Remembrance Center.